Okay, so we're going to be talking about, I think, in the official syllabus, course catalog, whatever you have it, I was going to be teaching about the history of halakha. At the time, that's what I figured would be best name for the section. In the meantime, I've retitled it, but it's basically the same as what I had in mind before. But I think a more correct title of what we're going to be doing is Criteria and Parameters of Legal Interpretation of Halakha. Now, it may sound redundant to say legal interpretation of Halakha, but those of you who've been here in the last few weeks with Rabbi Goshen Gossin, who really gave the first unit of the course, can understand the significance of that. As for the last several weeks, we've been dealing with a different type of interpretation of halakha, a hashkafic interpretation, an ideological interpretation that had absolutely no ramifications on the legal interpretation, meaning Rabbi Natan's halakha is the same as the halakha in Ger, and the same as the halakha in Lubavitch, and the same as the halakha in Morocco. There's nothing about Rabbi Nachman's, as far as I understand it, there's nothing about Rabbi Nachman's teachings which changes the way halakha is practiced. Now, in this unit, we're going to be discussing about how halakha was interpreted on a legal basis, meaning looking at the halakha and trying to understand what is the halakha? How do we know what we're supposed to be doing? As we have a Torah, we're given Chamisha Chumshei Torah, we're given a Mishnah, and we're given this whole legal, you know, the Yama Talmud, this whole tremendous discussion of people trying to figure out what it is that we're supposed to do. Right? And the question is, how do you come to that? I mean, clearly anybody who has studied halakha with some thought about it realizes that there's an interplay, as there must be, between the divine law and human interpretation of that law. There has to be. There's no other way. I mean, Lo B'Shamayim, you know, the very pillar, famous discussion we spoke about in previous years, when we're told by Bat Kol the Lo B'Shamayim, we're in fact told that the Torah is in human hands. We're expected to interpret it. So the question is, with what criteria? What criteria do we come to the Torah, the Torah Sheba'al Peh, and the Torah Shebichtav, and come to conclusions, exactly what we're supposed to do under different situations? The goals, Moshe Mordechai heard me give a very similar class a couple of years ago, and the very last class he said, completely surprised me, I didn't know where you were going, now I understand everything, I wish I'd understood from the beginning. So I'm going to try to alleviate that problem, that not letting you know where I'm going with this. In fact, I have two goals in mind, two major meta goals. I mean, obviously I have all sorts of smaller goals within each session, but the meta goals are, number one, to show you that the criteria of determining halakha that we've used throughout most of Jewish history is something that is not so much the case in the last 50 years, in the last 100 years. Again, one can determine it in different ways. But a lot of the criteria that were operative in determining halakha are not operative today, not legally not operative, simply are out of fashion, so to speak. Okay, that's something that I want to illustrate to you and to see how flexible halakha has been and question why it appears that it is less flexible in our time. Again, I think it's a question of appearance as opposed to reality. The second meta point that I want to bring across in the course of these classes is the impact that lay people, that society has on halakha, or a formulation of halakha. I mean, that we, not only those people in this room who are going to become poskim, and hopefully some of you will, but not only those people, but that every individual can be a shaping force in halakha, as a questioner, as a member of society, that halakha is not only something that flows down from poskim, but like the Torah, the model that we spoke about before, as interaction between God and man, halakha too, or psak halakha, is interaction between poskim and sibur. It's not simply a body that flows in one direction unitarily. And again, I'm making some general points, which we'll hope to flush out in much more detail as we go along. I'll repeat the caveat that I did make at the beginning, at the very introductory class, that some of these sources require background to completely understand, to completely appreciate. Those people who have less background should be careful to come to conclusions, certainly sweeping conclusions, and the fact that I say something doesn't necessarily mean it's true. I mean, I hope it is. I'm not trying to mislead you, but if something sounds great, the fact that I said it is not really a reason that makes it true. If you understand the sources, and if you understand why I'm saying what I'm saying, then you'll have a grasp on the material. Therefore, those people who are coming with less background should try to, number one, shore up that background as much as possible by learning the sources. And I'm only giving you the tip of the iceberg in terms of the sources. You'll see many, many more sources that those of you who want to look further should and certainly can if you have time. But we're only hitting the tip of the iceberg in many of these topics. But whatever sources I do give to you should be studied with mastery. And if you don't have the mastery to study them, to prepare them, then by all means try to find someone to work with who does have mastery, whether it's someone within the context of the group, whether it's someone outside the context of the group. But it's important to try to be be'inyanim, because it's going to be very, for the most part, it's going to be very textually based. As you see, a lot of the sources are Gemaras or Poskim or different things that assume a Shiva background. Okay, that's the caveat. In terms of today's class, again, what I gave you for preparation is really only the tip of the iceberg. We're going to be speaking about the impact of rationale, of perceived rationale, as a criteria of interpretation of halakha. That's what we're going to be studying this evening. This could be understood as Tamei HaMitzvot. Okay, and I've given a class called Tamei HaMitzvot from a different perspective. Some of the sources will be the same, but it's from a very different perspective. Meaning, you, normally when you hear a class about Tamei HaMitzvot, what's the issue? Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you've all heard classes or looked through sources. Again, some of what we saw today, the Gemara that I gave you in Brachot and the Rambam are classic sources that are always used when discussing the issue. What's the issue generally? Meaning, what's the bottom line question normally when that's being taught?
Is that why we have the mitzvah?
Yeah.
Is the Tam the reason for the mitzvah?
Can we find out what the reasons for the mitzvot are? Are they the reason why we observe the mitzvot? That's a general topic, and there are many sources about them, some of which we'll refer to this evening, but that's not really the topic today. The question today is whether these reasons that do find their way in the legal corpus, do these reasons have impact on halakha? That's the question. And I hear someone, you said, sure they do, you're anticipating. If you were, we'll see. I think it's very clear that they do. But there are certainly voices who would like to pretend otherwise, argue otherwise. We'll speak about it perhaps later in the course, but I think it's very important to be very clear with illustrations exactly how that impacts and how it works. Okay, I gave you a source which we're going to get back to in a little bit more depth later in this class, but I just wanted to use it as a jumping off point, and that's the Torah Tmima. Right, that's this sheet. Torah Tmima is Baruch HaLevi Epstein, right, who was actually not a professional rabbi. I think he was a banker, so some involved in some sort of commerce. His father, of course, was a professional rabbi, and he was the author of, but you know, the Orach HaShulchan, right? In any case, the Torah Tinas is a very interesting sefer. Brings all sorts of mamarei Chazal, sorts of statements of Chazal on the various psukim, and he often his commentary on the bottom is even much more interesting than the statements of Chazal. He often comes up with very original insights. Rabbi Cardozo was speaking about a midrash earlier this evening, and the Shor HaTzvi's insights into midrash is very very interesting, very fascinating, very insightful. In any case, here is not dealing with midrash per se. He also deals with Gemarot. Here is dealing with the issue of Shiloh HaKen. Shiloh HaKen being the mitzvah that actually I should have the pasuk. You have the pasuk in the computer. I'm going to have a Tanakh. Tanakh in the back. I think there's one over there. Or you can read it if you want. Aaron, you want to read it for us? Dvarim Chaf Bet pasuk Vav and Zayin. That's not there. Here.
See, which one's quicker?
The old way or the new way? Right? Okay, here we go. Got it. Sorry. Kikra Ken Kikor Lefanecha. See? Forget about computers. Never worth inventing. Okay. This is lighter. So. Kikra Ken Kikor Lefanecha B'derech B'chol Etz Ala Aretz Efruchim U'Beitzim V'Em U'Vetzed Al Efruchim Ola Beitzim Lo Tikach Em Al Habanim. Right? So the first verse is, if you chance upon Ken Tzipor, a nest of a bird, right, that's in front of you, etc., etc., right, so it says, Lo tikach em abim, don't take the mother from upon the children, Shalach tishalach at em, petabanim tikach aleman, yitav lach varach teyamim. Okay? So what should you do? You should send away the mother, and then you can take the birds for yourself, in order that you should have it will be good for you, and you have length of days. Okay, that's we're all familiar with the mitzvah. There's a lot of details in the end of Chulin, spells out all the various details of this mitzvah. The Torah Tmimah is very disturbed about a question that was raised before by someone else. That was raised to someone else. What was the question? Anybody remember? What was the question that was raised? Yeah.
The question is whether or not the pasuk, the commandment to send away the mother, applies whenever I chance upon a nest, or is it only when I want the eggs or the chicks?
Right, that's right. Okay, that's the question. The Avot Yair is asked as opposed to, well, long before the Torah Tmimah, was asked, what about if I find such a situation? I find a nest, I find the birds or the eggs, and the mother is sitting upon them. Am I obligated to send the mother bird away even if I don't want the chicks? That's the question. The Torah Tmimah is incensed by the question, right? You feel the passion behind his response. What's his response? Someone else? What does the Torah Tmimah say?
It's only when you need them. Only when you need the
right. Well, why is he so incensed by the question? Ki, hello, look inside. Ki, hello. The paragraph says, Vehine ra'inu. Right? How many lines are there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. At the second last word. Ki, hello, bahu, venele, al kol safek. Right? Sounds pretty passionate, no? For rabbinic, it's a litvah speaking. No? It's barur, it's elevated, it's clear, there's no doubt about this. Kimitam ikar mitzvah azot bechlal shelo litachzer, etc., etc. Vim ken, go down a few words again, barur davar kirach heter Torah, hetira Torah bezeh, avam nishe eno hotzeh, b'tipulam klal v'klal v'vaday hu sh'rashay la'avo me'alehem. Says the Torah to me, it's clear. All you have to do is look in the Torah. The Torah has a reason for the mitzvah. What's the reason? Right? It's not to be cruel. So therefore, why in the world would it expect you to take the birds if you don't want them? Right? Well, what sort of... Yeah, he says this is in fact just the opposite of what the mitzvah is all about. Right? Question is, where did here you have the Torah Tanima, who's a fairly recent writer, fairly recent rabbi. Right? He's not someone who's coming to legislate. Right? And he says it's clear that the Torah can't be saying that you have to take the mother. Right? Why not?
Thanks.
Because it goes against what?
Compassion.
Sorry?
It goes against compassion.
No, not the rationale of the mitzvah. Right? The fact is that's correct. But why do we care? Because it's the reason, the rationale of the mitzvah. The source is the Torah Tmima, that there's no way this could be what we're expected to do. Now, perhaps for some of you this seems very obvious and very straightforward. In fact, it's fairly radical, as we'll soon see. Not the conclusion, but the formulation, the methodology that he's using here. We have to go back. We have to go back to the Gemara to see what is this discussion of rationale. There's a famous expression, I put it for you on the syllabus, im dorshim tama dekra. What does Indorshim Tama Dekra mean? Im, you all know. Right? Whether we're, what's the resh?
Investigate.
That's not bad. Yeah, okay, I'll go with that. Tama Dekra. The reason of the text, the verse. Okay? So the question is the Machlokit. Machlokit, and we know between who? Rav Shimon and his adversary. Who's Rav Shimon's adversary? Rav Yehuda. Right, Rav Shimon is which Rav Shimon? Someone who's not from this corner over here. Someone else. Who would Rav Shimon be? Who's the famous Rav Shimon? Right. Shimon Bar Yochai. Good. Okay. Rav Yehuda is Rav Yehuda Bar Ilai. Okay. These everybody, you know, like Abai and Rava, Vishan Beit Hillel, right? Cardozo and I. Everybody has their Bar Plukta, the person they argue with. Right. We agree with each other a lot, but in any case. The Rav Shimon takes one position. Intuitively, which side do you think Rav Shimon would take? Should we be investigating the reason of the verse, or should we not be investigating? He's saying no. Intuitively, no. Anybody intuitively? I don't want anybody who knows the answer. Anybody who says intuitively the other way, or intuitively agree? So it comes out. Rav Shimon replies and says, "We do. We are Doresh Tama Dekra." And Rav Yehuda says we're not Doresh Tama Dekra. The main place that this comes out is two places. One very close to one of the Gemaras that you need to know. Sanhedrin, Daf, Chaf, Aleph, Amud Aleph. And the other one is Baba Masiya, Daf, Kuf, Tet, Vav. I'm not sure which Amud. In any case, it's the same thing. If you see in Sanhedrin, it's basically the same text. The main source of the machloket, it appears in two specific cases. I don't want to get bogged down into the details, but I'll tell you one of them just for a point of reference. It comes up in other circumstances, but less straightforward. The main context appears in the question of lo tachvol beged almana, right? Which means what? You're not supposed to hold on to the clothing of a widow. What does it mean? Why would he be holding on to clothing of a widow to begin with? All right, we're not talking about the Yosef story. What's the reason? Surety, right? That's the word called. Right? Collateral. Right? Collateral. You lent some money to the widow, right? What did people do to make sure that they were going to get back their loan? They took something as collateral. Okay, so you took a item of clothing from a widow. So the Torah, you're not allowed to. You made a loan to a widow. So the Torah, in the case of a widow, you're not allowed to hold her clothing as collateral. Okay, Rav Yehuda says any widow, it doesn't matter. Right? So Reb Shimon, no. Only a poor widow. A rich widow, you're allowed to take. Okay? And clearly there's a legal interpretation here. There's what we call nafka mina. In other words, they're arguing about halakha. There's a verse in the Torah that says don't take the clothing of a widow. Right? It sounds like it's any widow. Says Reb Shimon, no, it's not any widow. Even though that's what it says, it's not what it means. Why not? Because you have to investigate the reason. Why would there be a reason not to take, right? Why specifically a widow? Right? So Reb Shimon explains that if you're coming to a vulnerable single woman, which is what widow means in this context, and you're taking the clothes if it's a machloket, whether we're talking about day clothes or night clothes, but to simplify matters, you're coming there at night to give her a clothes back, right? Say it's pajamas, whatever it is, and you're coming back in the morning, right? You're going back to the door to collect it as your collateral again. It's going to give her a bad reputation. Okay, it doesn't look good that here's this man coming morning and evening to collect the clothes. Nobody is sure exactly why he's coming and going, but they see him coming and going. It's not good, right? So says Reb Shimon, that's only going to apply, right? That's only going to be a problem for what? For a poor widow. Because by a rich widow, she doesn't need the clothing. She'll let you keep it, right? I mean, I should mention that if you take its collateral from a poor person, the Torah obligates you to give it to them when they need it. You know, as if it's pajamas, so you have to go to them at night, and then you can collect it back in the morning. Okay. So anyway, so Reb Shimon says this problem of bad reputation is only going to be caused if she needs it every day. Right? Again, I think some of you are lost, but maybe other people. She's got it, but in any case. The issue is, I mean, as you can see, what's important for us in this discussion is that Reb Shimon says that you can interpret the law based on what seems very obvious, right? No one argues with the reason there, right? Reb Yehuda simply says, you know, I'm not going to draw any halakhic conclusion from the reason. Reb Shimon says, I am going to draw halachic conclusions from the reason. The Gemara actually defines it further and says that Reb Yehuda also believes that if the reason is stated by the Torah, then the reason can have halachic ramifications. Okay, if the Torah gives the reason, then we can be doresh tamid dekra. We can investigate the reason, meaning not just look at it, not just think about it, but see what halachic ramifications might come of it. Okay, the other example, I don't want to go into it, but the other example there is lo yarbo lanashim, speaking about a king, right? Over by a king says that you shouldn't have too many wives. Why not? Pen Yisur Levavo, right? Lest his heart go astray. Okay? So the Torah is given, Yehuda says, over there, I'm willing to draw halachic ramifications. Okay? So what do you have? You have Reb Shimon on the one hand who says, even when the Torah doesn't say give the reason, you're allowed to look for the reason and interpret based on that reason to how you're going to formulate the halacha, such as by the beged of the almana, that it only applies to, even the Torah says it across the board, in fact it only applies to a poor almana, to a poor widow, but a rich widow the Torah is not speaking about, even the Torah doesn't tell us that. It comes to Yehuda and says, no, I'm not going to be willing to make such interpretation, except in the case where the Torah tells us what the reason is. Okay. How would you formulate the machloket? How would you explain this? What's the underlying issue here? What are they really arguing about? Not if you got to be more specific. Not if we can come up, presumably. No. Again, you're back in the world of Tamei Mitzvot. Remember, we're not talking about Tamei Mitzvot here, per se. Yeah. Correct. Okay? But that's the second half. Now you got to put both of those two together. So what's the argument?
If we can know why God commanded us to do something?
That's the first half. Then again, put the two together. There's two parts. One of it is, can we come up with independent reasoning of the rationale? But that in of itself is not the issue. But based on that independent rationale, can we give authority to our interpretation of the law? Okay? Coming up with reasoning, having a right to say reasons, that anybody can do. You want to make a sefer, right? Anybody can come up with tam and mitzvot, this, that, and the other. No one's saying you can't do that. I mean, there may be some, but certainly not here. Right? That's not the issue. The issue is, can we take our own interpretations seriously enough that we put everything on the line? Right? We put our observance of Torah on the line. Let me put it a different way. According to Rabbi Yehuda, right, when Rabbi Shimon takes the beged from a rich widow, what's he doing? What's he doing? According to Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Shimon, he's making a deal on the Torah. He's acting properly. According to Rabbi Yehuda, what's he doing? Yeah, but
he's violating
what? The Ratzon of Hashem. He's putting his own mind, his own interpretation into the text, and coming up, giving himself authority to reinterpret. As opposed to interpret, he's reinterpreting the Ratzon Hashem. Okay, reinterpreting, meaning he's doing something that's illegitimate. Why? Because according to Rav Yehuda, right, even though what Rav Shimon says is perfectly rational, makes a lot of sense, but who says we have a right to assume that we can know what the reason is? However, one second. However, even Rav Yehuda agrees, when the Torah itself tells us what the reason is, then we can use our minds to figure out what the ramifications of that reason are. Okay, yeah, Binyam.
2 days. If I may. Firstly, allow for you to say doesn't make any sense. I can answer it with one thing. If the reason of Judah has a problem with it, because how can we allow our reason, or how can we allow any reason to interpret the Pasuk, it shouldn't matter if the reason is in the Torah. The only way it can matter if the reason is in the Torah is if we're assuming when the reason isn't in the Torah that we don't know the reason. The problem is not interpreting the Pasuk. The problem is in assuming we know the reason. It's not in having the authority to interpret the Pasuk and say, this is what this Pasuk means. It's more fundamental. Who says that's the reason? They speculate in the Gemara what the reason is. It seems that Rabbi Huda is saying, we can't ever be sure of the reason. Only in a case the Torah gives us the reason, then we're sure of the reason. Otherwise, I'm not sure how it makes sense.
I'm missing your point.
He said before, the biggest problem is, how do we have the authority to use our own interpretation on the halakha?
To use our interpretation of the verse to determine halakha.
But, if the reason is in the Torah, he allows it. Why should a reinterpretation be allowed?
No, it's not reinterpretation. If the Torah says, gives us the reason, then we can feel confident. In other words, clearly some power is given over for interpretation. The Torah, the Yud Gimel Midot, certainly there are things that are given over to the rabbis. The question is, at what point is it legitimate interpretation? And what point is there a risk of speculation?
Speculation lies in assuming we know the reason. Right.
So according to Rabbi Yehuda, correct, that's right,
okay.
That's right. And even Rabbi Yehuda, you're right, there could be a third position
right.
That says that we can't interpret anything at all.
Right.
But
that's not Rabbi Yehuda's position.
Right, and it doesn't seem like there's really any room for, I mean, we'll get to positions that sound similar to that, but something in the Gemara doesn't appear, at least there's no opinion that's expressed in such a fashion, that you can't interpret anything.
Because we don't know that's the reason. We're
that's right.
Speculating
that's right.
The reason.
That's right. Correct. Okay. Gil, you want to say something?
Yes. So I just want to know if there's any similarity between these two cases. But I remember hearing a fairly well-known Rav say that basically say that basically a patur of women from a certain mitzvah should be mevatel because the reason no longer applies.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying specifically that women are patur from mitzvah seisha of mangalan, like tefillin, because, and this is the reason that he gave,
right.
Because they're mishubadot to their children and their husbands, right. And today all women are called banot chorin or whatever, and therefore they should be, this patur should no longer hold, and they should be mukuyav in mitzvah seisha of mangalan.
Right, okay, so
can you... And a friend of mine took extreme exception to this. And she said, you can't infer a reason for the mitzvah and then say, based upon that, you can be mevatel or patur. So is this anything similar to what's going on here?
Right, yeah, it's something similar. I mean, I think we need to get a lot more under our belt before we can see whether it's similar enough.
Okay.
But it's the same line of thinking. As it's based on the same type of approach, right? The first step we have to take from here is who do we follow? We said there's Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda, right? And for those yeshiva guys, when we have a machlok Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda, who do we follow? Rav Yehuda. We follow Rav Yehuda. Okay, so that's a more conservative opinion. People seem disappointed. I see some faces. But it's not so simple. In fact, the whole Talmudic discussion of who we follow in this particular case is very, very complicated, in such a way that there's no clear conclusion. As according to the rules and according to the main discussion in Bava Metzia, we follow Rabbi Yehuda in the post-scheme. But it comes out there are all sorts of other Gemaras that seem to go with Rabbi Shimon, and there's certainly post-scheme, both Rishonim and Achronim, some of which we'll see today and perhaps in the next session, that follow the approach of Rabbi Shimon. However, even if we were not to follow Rabbi Shimon, I think it's important to understand that Rabbi Yehuda still has a lot of room for maneuvering in the sense that, as we mentioned before, where the reason is given in the Torah, so then there is that right, which Binyamin was questioning before, that right to interpret what halachic ramifications come out of that reason the Torah is given.
Does the Gemara say anything about Rabbi Shimon explaining why sometimes the Torah gives a reason and why it sometimes does not give a reason? It's Rabbi Shimon, right?
Yeah. No, we'll get to a related discussion in a few minutes about the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says that the Torah doesn't usually give reasons. We'll speak about that a little bit. But Rabbi Shimon, as far as I know, I don't think there's such an explanation in the Gemara itself by anyone, except for this discussion which tangentially speaks about it. In any case, let me just give you a couple of places where there's a more Mari Makomot. Anybody really wants to get into this whole discussion, there's a very nice article on the topic of Dorshin Talmud Dekra. It's under the entry Talmud Dekra in the Encyclopedia Talmudit. You can find all the sources and all the discussion. It's interesting reading. In any case, some of the Rishonim who bring other cases where we follow Reb Shimon, or that Rabbi Yehuda would not disagree. There's one discussion in Bava Metzia on Daf Tzadi Amud Aleph. Right there, the discussion is about muzzling an animal. Right. So Gemara there says that when an animal is going to eat something that's improper for it, it's going to make it sick, you're allowed to muzzle it. Right. Again, according to strict interpretation, what does the Torah say? Don't muzzle an animal. Right? So according to strict interpretation, what should the halacha be in that case? You're not allowed to muzzle the animal, right? Certainly according to Rabbi Yehuda. Right? Rabbi Shimon might say, well, in fact, it's not the halacha. Right? So the Shita Mekubetzet says in the name of the Rosh that there, right, everybody agrees to the halacha, but the Shita Mekubetzet says that over there, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree. Why? Because the reason is obvious. Right? Again, that's not their only interpretation. Right? But it's interesting that the Rush is insightful in showing us that this does seem to violate the approach of Rabbi Yehuda. And nonetheless, it's the halacha. And the Rush provides us a nice rationale, saying that when the reason is very obvious, so even Rabbi Yehuda agrees. Another case in Baba Kama, which is more complicated. I don't want to get into, but the question of kofer bakol, patur me'ashua, that some places, based on the reasoning, it doesn't apply. There you can look up the Mordechi entry Kuf Lamed Chet. And the Mordechi is behind the Rif. Then there's Iran. Again, there's a whole list of places where we don't seem to follow Rabbi Yehuda, and all of these with halachic ramifications. And there's Iran in Rosh Hashanah, Chaf Aleph and Bet. Normally we're allowed to be Mechalal Shabbat for Eidut HaChodesh, or at least they used to be, and that's the point of the Gemara, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai eliminated that and said that except for Nisan and Tishrei, maybe I remember, but generally speaking, we're not allowed after Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to break the Shabbat in order to bring testimony about the new moon. Why not? Because the original rationale of the temple service doesn't apply. It says the Ran over there that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai followed Rabbi Shimon and not Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, that's as a certain amount of background to this machloket. Now, obviously, one thing that's clear, I mean, it's good that Gila brought a contemporary example. It's obviously clear that we're not in a time period where we're generally interpreting halakha, right, in the same way. That being said, as you know, in government in general, people complain about in Israel that the legislative branch is not the only branch that interprets law. And in all systems, maybe the Israeli Supreme Court overdoes it, but it's part of normal governmental systems that the judicial branch also interprets laws. And even though today we don't have normative legislation, we're way past the time when we're interpreting halakha bona fide, and it is strictly speaking. Nonetheless, what poskim come to do throughout generations is, based on the cases that come to them, interpret new situations. Okay. In any case, what we're looking for here is to create a paradigm for poskim. Right? We're looking for how does the Torah, how does halacha operate? Is it concerned about rationale? Is it not concerned about rationale? And how concerned is it? How much power does rationale have in determining the halakha? The Torah Tmima that we saw at the very beginning, even though he's very recent, seemed to be convinced that the halakha had to be a certain way based on the rationale of the mitzvah. By the way, when the Torah Tmima was speaking, was he speaking according to Rabbi Shimon or according to Rabbi Yehuda? Right? I don't know if you want me to read the verses again. Can we read the verses again? I should read it again. Okay. The verse says, Ki krekem tzipor lefanecha bederech bekol etz o al haaretz efrochim ubeitzim v'em revetzet al efrochim o al habeitzim lo tikach haem al habanim. Shalach tishalach et haem v'et habanim tikach lach leman yitav lach v'arach t'yamim. Okay. It says, Torah Tmima, 100 some years ago, right? If you see one and you don't want the eggs, you have no obligation to take the mother away. Why? Because it's cruel. Is that a Rabbi Shimon type of approach, or is it a Rabbi Yehuda type of approach? Sounds like Rabbi Shimon, right? No word in the Torah. So the Torah does give a reason. What's the reason? Unless you follow the Shita Mikvetz. Very good. Yes, sir. Right. Okay. Excellent point. Right? Yeah. I mean, by the way, it would be a justification for the Torah Tmima to bring what Rafi said. Because to say that he follows Rav Shimon, someone so late to take such a obvious and blatant position that seems to be rejected, is problematic. Right? So to say that Shita Mokebet, in this case, it may not apply, Rabbi Yehuda might agree, comes to strengthen the position of the Torah Tmima. Yeah.
So it's cruel to send the mother away also and take the eggs. And you're basically saying the Torah permits a certain degree of cruelty,
right,
no more than that.
Right. So that's what we're going to get to in the next part, right? The example, the reason I chose this example, there are many examples, but why did I choose specifically Shiloh HaKen? Because the whole discussion about it seems to bring us to the opposite conclusion, one of which is what you mentioned. But even before that, We have the Gemara, which I gave you, which is on the back of your Torah Tmima, right? This Gemara. Brachot Lamed Gimel, right? Anybody want to read? Somebody not want to read? Right? No, sorry. It's the last one. That's a short Gemara. Danielle, you want to read? You have it?
I don't think I do.
You don't think you do? Yeah,
that's why I
didn't volunteer. Okay. Yeah, don't keep it. It's on the back of that thing. First read the Mishnah, yeah. Okay, so what is the Mishnah saying?
I guess whoever says
just the first part,
because of this,
because
of this Mishnah, we have Keli, we're supposed to be
That's not exact. Maybe one more exact. Al can what?
Forgotten.
Yeah.
Because before, God's mercy even comes to that.
Yeah. Okay. Good. So God's mercy even comes to what? To the bird's nest, right? A person who says that in tefillah, what do we do with them? Rashtikin. Okay. So the Gemara wants to know why, right? And says the case of modim, which is parallels bishlama. Bishlama means what? That's fine. We don't have a problem with that, right? Mishum demechse k'shtei reshuyot v'al tov yizakher shemecha nami mashma al tova v'al ara v'tzman chayav adam mevarech al ara k'shem shemvarech al tova. Ela, go ahead, continue from there. Right. Yeah. The next part is another thing. We're not going to read it. It's good to read it when you have time. Those who didn't see it already. What were the two reasons suggested?
Kina here is jealousy.
Yeah.
So we say that there's, because of Masa Breshi, they're jealous. That's right.
But yeah, anybody want to explain that? What does it mean? Yeah.
No? You say that the birds are more
appropriate. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That you're going to bring jealousy to God's creatures, that it reaches some animals and not others. Right? So that's reason number one. What's reason number two?
We're also be going to the Kharikara. Not sure exactly. I mean, I know what it means, but I don't know how it connects.
Saying that the source of Hashem's comments are Rachamim, but mm-hmm.
really they're Gzerot.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so here we have a problem, right, with this whole line of thinking about Rachamim being involved, which is what the Torah Tmima says, right? This whole line of reasoning that Rachamim is the issue seems to be rejected, at least by one of the two reasons, right? So the Rambam, by the way, the Rambam, the more Nevuchim, bases his whole Velt on Shalom on the ability to rationally explain mitzvot. That is to say, that all mitzvot need to be for a purpose. So this is the Rambam in a few places, especially in the Mora, in the third part, I think, chapter 31, 33. It's very important to the Rambam's way of understanding Judaism, but the words of the Rambam are echoed on, specifically on this mitzvah by the Ramban, as well as the Sefer HaChinuch and others. Okay, what does the Rambam do with this discussion? He says, you're going to ask me when I tell you that there's a reason and we don't want to be cruel. Cruelty is the reason, right? For this mitzvah, just like the Torah Tmima says, or not exactly, but similar to the Torah Tmima, cruelty is the reason we don't be cruel to birds. God doesn't want us to be cruel to birds, better. So he's going to say, well, what about this Gemara? So what's the Rambam's answer to this Gemara? That's why I gave you the Hebrew. The Hebrew is clearer. I mean, I think that's exactly how the Hebrew reads. If you look at the sort of kapach, right? Does he have it? Val tikshalai, right? Don't ask me, right? Domrim Zal, well, can't for you get Rahamecha Vigomer, right? Why shouldn't we ask him about this Gemara? What is the answer?
hold like the opinion because, you know, it's
there. Right. We don't hold like this opinion. How does the Rambam know we don't hold like this opinion? Can't be. Can't be, because then it goes against Yahdut. It goes against Judaism, this opinion. According to the Rambam, this is Judaism. What do you mean? In fact, there's another statement which the Rambam speaks about elsewhere, which the Rambam says is unique in Chazal, and therefore has to be explained away. That's a Midrash in Breishit Rabbah, famous Midrash, where the Midrash proclaims that God doesn't really care how we kill an animal, how we do Shechita. What difference does it make to God? Machpatle, says the Midrash, whether you cut from this side or that side, right? God doesn't care, except what? They're all Gzerot. They're just decrees, right? Says the Rambam, who cannot stomach such an idea, right, that God would invoke arbitrary decrees upon us. So that's not the case, and every single mitzvah has an explanation. Brings another statement from Chazal that Shlomo HaMelech knew the reason for every single mitzvah except for what? For Paraduma, right? And therefore, and even then, it's only that he didn't know it, but that the rationale does exist. So says the Rambam, this is a very unique and unusual statement. You can look in the Rambam and see what he says about it. The truth is the Ramban, who takes a position very similar to the Rambam, I think it has actually a better explanation than the Rambam of this discussion. The Rambam seems to basically stonewall anything that suggests that there's no, that rationale is inoperative, so the Rambam can't be, and sort of pushes it aside almost with rationales that aren't necessarily worthy of the Rambam. So Ramban, even though stretches also, because these statements are difficult, gives, I think, a more plausible explanation in terms of what's going on here. The Ramban, first of all, asks what I think you were referring to: if we're supposed to be so nice to animals, why are we eating them all the time and killing them and taking their fur? So the Ramban says the Rambam is aware of it. I think in the English he refers to it, but the Ramban says, you know, bottom line is it's not for the birds; it's for us. It's for our midot. We're trying to avoid cruelty. Animals are here for our use, but we try to do certain acts in certain ways as to remove cruelty from our midot. And so the Ramban, the gzerot that the Gemara is speaking about here, and as well as in the Midrash, are simply saying that God doesn't get anything out of it. He says, what's gzerat ha-melech? Gzerat ha-melech is that the king is much better on the Ramban side. Let's take a look in Devarim on the Chafbet, on the Shuach HaKen. The Ramban says that's what a gezerah is. A gezerah is something that has no intrinsic value for the mitzaveh, not for the mitzuveh. Okay, but be that as it may, it's not really important for our discussion, except in as much as this is what the discussion that the Torah Tmimah is basing himself on. If you look carefully at Torah Tmimah, it's more in line with the Ramban than with the Rambam, and says that there's no way that we'd have to be cruel to birds, because the whole point of the mitzvah is not to be cruel. Again, not necessarily for the birds, but more for us. And therefore, if you have no need for the birds, there's no way that the Torah would want us to be involved in chasing away mother birds. By the way, the Torah Tmimah could be accused of being more liberal. Has a friend in the Chatam Sofer, certainly can't be accused of being a liberal, though he certainly was very innovative in Pisgah Halakha. Chatam Sofer being the staunch opponent of the Enlightenment in Austria-Hungary, of course. Built the famous yeshiva Pressburg, and is, for better or worse, became famous for his phrase Hadash Asur Min HaTorah, which is a really borrowed phrase. But be that as it may, that's right. In reinterpreted, right? In Chelik Aleph of the Shu'at Chatam Sofer, Shela Kuf, that's the number 100, right? There's a parallel Shela. Shela is actually about doing this on Shabbat, so it's a complex Shela involved both the issue of the Havot Yair. You don't want the birds. In the case of Shabbat, they're Muksa, so you really don't want them, right? Can you still shoo away? Should you still shoo away the mother bird? The Chatam Sofer agrees with the Torah Tamima, or he anticipates the Torah Tamima almost for the same reasons, and even goes further. He says that really, not only is it not, are you not obligated? It's probably forbidden. It's probably asur. Why? Why is it asur? Because it's. Sorry? No. It's cruel. And why is that a problem? Why is that a problem?
Sar
Balachayim. No. I mean, he doesn't mention Sar Balachayim, but... That's what? Against the... The reason of the mitzvah. Right? Not the text. The reason of the mitzvah, says the Chatam Sofer. He quotes the Ramban. And says, we see from the Ramban that it's because of achzariyut. Yeah. If you don't have a reason for it, it's achzari. And then he brings in Tzar Balei Chayim, which could make it an isser. By the way, as an aside, some of you might know that there are people who do this. Right? And why do they do this? It's a Zohar. The Zohar says that it's a good thing because you bring about... it's a complicated thing, but basically you bring about mercy from God by doing this mitzvah. Okay? So once that, it seems strange, but if the Zohar says it, says the Chatam Sofer, very interesting, that it appears, and you have to know the whole sugya in the Gemara in Chulin, but he says it appears to him it's actually a machloket between our Gemara and the Zohar. And the normative poskim, which the Chatam Sofer was normative poskim, says when there's a machloket between the Bavli and anything else, basically, that we follow the Bavli, and says in this case also we follow the Bavli. The Chatam Sofer is a little less clear in terms of these conclusions because of the Shabbat element. That's really the nuxus of the question. But he seems to come to the conclusions of the Torah Tamima in even stronger terms, based on the Tam of Mitzvah, which is a Rebbe Shimon type of Tam of Mitzvah, or as Rafi put it very well, possibly also Rebbe Yehuda, based on the Shita Mekubetzit. Yeah.
I'm inclined to argue a little bit differently than what you're saying. You're saying that it's a machlokas between Rebbe Shimon and basically between Rebbe Shimon and Rebbe Yehuda, or not.
Go ahead.
But you could also approach the issue as that everyone agrees that you're Yehuda Shimon Dekra. The question is, are you coming to this point in the view of the Zohar that says that you should do it, like the Gra also postulates that way?
Yeah.
Or if you're coming from the point of view of Nigla, that you should only do it when it's necessary.
I mean, I didn't really want to choose the Zohar because it makes it I think, confused. I think you were confused by it. Because
I knew it beforehand.
No, but what I'm saying is this. I don't think you're focusing on what I'm focusing on. The issue of whether we follow the Bavli or the Zohar is a side point. If you forget the Zohar for a second.
I'm talking about two different time at HaMitzvah. It's not that one school of thought says there is a Tom and we go with it, and the other one says there is no Tom.
Correct.
That one school says there's a Tom and the other school says there's a different Tom.
Correct, the Seder. But what I'm looking at is the Tom that's offered according to the Nigla.
Okay.
Okay? And I'm saying that should be very surprising to us, based on the fact that we don't seem to be posek like Rabbi Yehuda. And here the Torah does not specifically tell us the reason for it. And nonetheless, you have achronim that seem to be very clear. Again, the language of the Torah Tamima, and the Chatam Sofer also is quite clear that in this case, we follow the reason of the mitzvah, which seems to be a Rav Shimon Dick approach. And on a simple level, it seemed to be against Rabbi Yehuda. So it's surprising. That's my point here. But you're right that, in fact, what the Chatam Sofer says is that if you hold from the Zohar, at least the way I understood the Chatam Sofer the first time I read it, which is, I'm not sure I understood correctly, what he might have said, or he could have said, is now that the Zohar gives a reason, so it's no longer tzar, it's no longer without a reason, therefore you're allowed to do it. In other words, everybody agrees that if you need the eggs, you're allowed to send away the mother bird. If there's another reason that's equally as valid, right? Which presumes what the Zohar is saying. So then, of course, you can do it. And
that shows one of the religious values also.
Okay. Sure. But again, that's what I'm saying. I think the Zohar confuses the matter rather than clarifies. It's not really important. The issue here is not for what you're going to do when you see these eggs. I'm not really concerned with that per se. It's simply to illustrate the point that normative poskim, such as the Chatam Sofer, following the German school, basically, and the Torah Tmimah was following the Lithuanian school. These are normative people who are telling us that, in fact, we're Doresh Tamid Dekra on some level, even if they're not saying these words. But this is a halakha in a Doraita mitzvah. Right? It's a halakha in a Doraita mitzvah. Remember, the Chovat Yaya was asked whether one is mechuyav. Right? If you see such thing, are you obligated? Right? Which means that if you are obligated and you don't do it, you're mevatel mitzvah tasin haTorah. That's a serious thing. It's not eating chazir, but it's a serious thing. You know, if God gives you a mitzvah and you choose not to do it, that's not such a great thing. Right? Comes along these poskim and say, we, based on our understanding of the reason, say not to do it, even though, as Rav Shimon said, we're going to bring our own svara. Granted, it's not their own svara; it's the svara of the Rishonim. Right? It doesn't really. We don't see it before the Rishonim, by the way. It's not the svara of Tanaim or Moraim. They're relying at least on the brains of the Rishonim, the Rambam, the Ramban, the Sefer Chinuch, and others, to say that that we can decide not to do this ostensible mitzvah for that reason.
Is the Rambam actually saying that the two shittot which are brought in Mishnah, right, of which he only chooses one, which is the Rachamim, yes, and you just said correctly that why is that? Because that's the Jewish approach.
Right.
So you're saying that the also one in the Mishnah is not the Jewish approach?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the Rambam is broader than that in the sense that there were different opinions within Chazal, but there was a normative approach to things which pushed up. There was a struggle within Chazal to determine what is Judaism. And in that struggle, they determined that the one opinion that agrees with, because according to the Rambam, there's so much, it's substantiated in so many other places, that's the normative position. Even though it's not expressed as this one's correct and this one's not correct in this particular junction, the other one was rejected as many other positions within the tumult of decision making as ultimately un-Jewish, but not that it's roots that was coming. Yeah, again, that's somewhat speculative. In any case, there's one more thing I want to mention. I want to conclude very briefly. There is we followed various Rishonim and Achronim. Which to my mind is certainly the dominant approach, that reasons, even when dealing with Doraita mitzvah, Torah, mitzvah that are given in the Torah, there's room sometimes for looking at how to formulate the halakha based on its reason. Okay? At the same time, there are voices that seem to indicate otherwise. Most famous among the voices, in terms of the early people that speak about a different perspective, is the Shut HaRashba. Rashba was also one of the great Rishonim. I don't know that much about him, but from his writings, clearly is influenced by mysticism. He's a Talmud of the Ramban. Who was also a mystic, but the Ramban is a rational mystic, as the Rashba, at least in this tshuva, seems to go in a different direction in the Chelek Aleph of his Tshuvot, Sheilat Tzadi Dalet, 194, is a very interesting tshuva where he says, how do we know any of the reasons for anything? Because even though the Torah, this is an interesting point, try to remember to get into this next time. You asked about when does the Torah give explanations, when it doesn't give explanations, the Gemara and Sanhedrin, which we'll discuss next week. But the Rashba says that even when the Torah gives reasons, how do we know that's the main reasons. There can be so many reasons, right? The implication of the Rashba is how can we play around with this? All right? How do we even sort of give us a reason? The Nefesh HaChayim, hundreds of years later, we'll read that later in the unit, ends up saying something similar, and perhaps there are more voices echoing, and perhaps that's one of the reasons why we have a more conservative rabbinate afraid to do to maneuver based on Tamei HaMitzvah. In any case, we'll mention the Rashba again, we'll mention the Gemara and Sanhedrin, but as a conclusion, just to summarize what we've spoken about today, what we've seen is that already from the time of the Gemara, where there's a disagreement about to what extent our independent thinking can have the authority to interpret Psukim from the Torah based on their reasonings to come up with halachic, meaning legal, ramifications. We saw there's a machlok at how far one can go with that. But everyone seems to agree that there is room for that, at least in their time, in the time of the Gemara, certainly in the time of the Mishnah. But surprisingly enough, even though we normally would expect to follow the more conservative opinion, we see that throughout the Rishonim and Achronim and various sugyot in the Gemara, that the various halachic teachers do bring this in a variety of cases. That doesn't mean that they always bring it in. Doesn't mean it's always legitimate. About that, we'll need to speak about much more.